First omnibus finance bill this morning, the state government bill authored by Senator Saxhog, and members, obviously we're a little bit short because of the weather and a couple of other conflicting meetings, but the intent is to work our way through the omnibus bills. We have, keeping in mind, we have seven omnibus bills this year in the past. Senator Fischbach, I forget how many we had 2 years ago. I know 4 years ago we had 10 bills, so a little bit less than we've had before. And additionally, although it's not subject to the third deadline, the legacy bill. So if we can begin with Senator Saxhog with... should have pointed out that we do have a quorum present. And Senator Saxhog, if you want to proceed with Senate File 1589.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1589 is the Omnibus State Departments and Veterans Budget Division Bill. I have the A1 amendment, first of all, put the bill in shape we would like to have it.
And let me indicate for members that this is the first time the bill has been heard, so this would be an author's amendment if we can have it distributed. Mm-hmm.
Should be in the packets.
Do it. Okay, Mr. Bonner has indicated it's in the packet. Is that? See it. It appears we don't have the amendment.
No, there's no amendment.
Sure. Yep.
Well, Senator Saxhog,
no.
Why don't you begin the explanation of the bill? The moment we have copies of the amendment, we'll suspend the conversation on the bill and take up the amendment right away, but we need to
all
make
right.
copies.
Mr. Chair.
Agreed.
Chair Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, may I just ask? It's not a delete-all. It's just it's a...
No, it's a technical amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd just like to give some thanks out here before we start. This bill pretty much came in on the targets that we were anticipating. And I would like to thank the State Department Veterans Division for their attendance, a good work, quality conversation in shaping up the bill, and always thanks to our excellent staff. Speaking of our excellent staff, I'm going to ask Kevin Lundeen to go over the spreadsheet at this particular time.
Okay, Mr. Lundeen.
Thank you. The spreadsheet that I'm going to be going over is the longer, more detailed one. I think you have two spreadsheets in your packet. One is just dealing with the change items, and then there's a more detailed one with the base and the change items in it. And taking a look at page one, first we have the legislature there. There were increases given to the Senate and the House of approximately 9% over the base. And then moving to the second page of the spreadsheet, there was also an increase given to the LCC. The operating budget for the LCC was increased by 9%, with the exception of the legislative auditor's budget, which got a 14% increase. And then there is language contained in Article 2 of the bill that repeals the Sunset Commission, and there was an appropriation or dollars in the base for a staff person, and so that is the $139,000 a year that's showing up on the spreadsheet. And then next, moving down to the, or I should point out, there are a couple of riders that are in the appropriation article. There's some riders that we've typically had in the past. One is dealing with the House allowing them to accept voluntary donations. There's also a rider in there that we've had in years past dealing
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if I could ask that as we go through this, if we could refer to the line number, it would be a little easier to
Okay, Mr. And I tell you what, Senator Newman, as long as you've a good time to interrupt, we're having the A1 amendment distributed. So if we can revert back, Senator Saxog, you wanted to revert back to the A1 amendment, which has now been passed out. If you want to, Senator Saxog moves the A1 amendment, but if you can offer an explanation of what it is.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment is a technical amendment. As you can see, it changes some figures. The first group, starting in line 2, changes the governor's interagency transfer cost from $720,000 to $750,000. The next one, lines 3 through 10, deals with the funds that are going to public television, and whereas they were uneven between the first year and the second year, the same amount of money, except they'll be the same both of those years. Line 11 is just the wrong number changed. Line 12 removes a section that one of the members of the State Government Finance Committee objected to. Lines 13 to 18 is something for the DNR to prevent them from losing funds. Maybe I'd ask Ms. James to give a brief explanation of that one.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, the amendment on lines 13 through 18 incorporates some language that the DNR requested to a provision that deals with how money is transferred to the OET, and they requested this particular language to protect some federal funds that would otherwise be at risk if we didn't word it the way they described.
And finally, lines 19 to 25 make the CPI index for the governor's salary increases conform the way we've referenced the CPI in other parts of state law.
Okay, so we got the amendment. This is being treated as an author's amendment because it's the first time this bill has officially been presented. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Lundeen.
Okay. I'll finish up with a couple of riders for the legislature, and I'm looking at the Article 1, the appropriation article of the bill, page 3. There is a rider in there that we've had in a number of past budget bills just dealing with the legislators' forum and some of the base funding going for that. Then there is also another rider for the LCC that's authorizing them to provide some funding to NCSL for the conference that's coming up in Minnesota in 2014. And it's also saying that it's anticipating that these funds will be returned to the LCC. Next on the spreadsheet, we get to the governor's office. That would be line 68 of the spreadsheet. And there are no changes to the general fund appropriation in the governor's office. However, the amendment that we just adopted, the special revenue fund statutory that's at the bottom at 720, that has been increased in the amendment to 750. And if you look in the bill, there is a rider that addresses that on page 4 of Article 1. And essentially, there's a reporting requirement in there that whenever the governor enters into interagency agreements to pay for some of the costs, staffing costs, and that of his office. And the $750 that we adopted is the limit for each fiscal year that can be charged or can be charged to state agencies to pay for staff in his office. Getting back to the spreadsheet and moving to line 80 in the state auditor, the first change item that was requested by the state auditor and included in the governor's recs was taking the audit practice and making it an enterprise fund. And that was not included in the bill. It doesn't have a net effect on the spending for the state auditor. Rather, the way it works now is we give an appropriation to the state auditor, and when they do audits to the counties, the revenue that they take in is a non-dedicated receipt to the general fund. And we continue this practice. The proposal in the governor's bill was to have this deposited directly into a special revenue fund and be statutorily appropriated. And then moving down to line 98, there was a request for staff retention, which was not included in this bill. Moving then to page 3 of the spreadsheet and line 104, this is just another change item related to the audit practice enterprise fund, which is not included. And then moving down to line 116, job Z, there's a change item there, and there's language in the bill. This is Senate File 191, which was a bill from Senator Ress that we heard. And this is basically moving the job CO oversight from the state auditor to the legislative auditor and then making a cut in the state auditor's budget for that amount. And then there's a couple of non-general fund items listed here, looking down to line 121. The revenue that was related that I talked about going into the special revenue, which we didn't do, that's what the audit practice is representing. And then there was a bill of Senator Saxhog's Senate File 255 that was dealing with the cities and towns accounting system. And there was language included in the governor's bill, and we made some changes to the language, and that's why there's a little bit of difference in that you can see in the funding amount that will be coming in, the fees, the revenue that will be coming in. And then next, if we go down to line 133, we get to the Attorney General. And there were no changes in the appropriations to the Attorney General. There is one rider in Article 1 on page 5, and this is a rider that we've had in for a number of years, which just requires $65,000 a year of the base to be transferred to public safety for a grant to the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. And then if we turn the spreadsheet to page 4 and we get to the Secretary of State, there were a few change items there that were requested by the Secretary of State, the first of which was to replace the federal HAVA funds, which will be fully spent. We have a rider in Article 1 that appropriates the remaining HAVA funds, and there's about $1 million in the account. And then once that funding's done, the Secretary of State was requesting the general fund replace those funds. And this bill contains half of that request at $500,000 a year. Then there were a couple of other items, a reduction that the Secretary of State brought forth for some efficiencies in the office. And then there was also an appropriation for attorney's fees for a redistricting lawsuit. And also in Article 1 on page 5, there is the language for that lawsuit and the appropriation.
And Mr. Lundin, that's done as a deficiency, so that's this year of that'll be spent in this year, not the next biennium.
Well, it is a deficiency, and we took the language that the governor had, which it's being appropriated in fiscal year 14. So,
do we have any other deficiency appropriations in this bill? I mean, usually we'll have a separate deficiency bill, so this is a little bit different. But do we have any other deficiencies?
Well,
there
are two other items in the Office of Administrative Hearings that we'll get to later that are actually deficiencies.
Maybe members, I don't think the governor ever presented a deficiency bill to us, so we've done this within the spending bills. So the one catch is, as opposed to a normal deficiency bill, is that depending on when this bill finally passes, I mean, normally the omnibus bills pass toward the end of a legislative session, there'll be some time to take care of the deficiency between now and the beginning of the fiscal year of the biennium, but normally we would pass it sometime during the session. So it's a little bit different, but go ahead.
And then moving down on the spreadsheet to line 197, the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, they had a request for additional funding, and that has been included in this bill. That brings their general fund appropriation to $1 million a year, and this is just to kind of maintain their current staffing level and to fund some IT improvements for the board. And then moving to the next page, page 5 of the spreadsheet, we get to the investment board. There is no change in the general fund appropriation there. Next is the Administrative Hearings Office. And here there are a couple of change items, and these were two of the other deficiencies that I was referencing. The campaign violations deficiency, which is $60,000, and then the data practices hearing costs, which is $36,000. And in Article 1, page 6, there are riders for these items, and then the typical rider that we have that appropriates $130,000 in the first year for campaign complaints. And moving down the spreadsheet, there was no change from the base for the workers' compensation appropriation. And then moving down the spreadsheet, we get to the Office of Enterprise Technology. And the change items start down at the bottom of the page. OET came in with some reductions that were included in the governor's budget related to some of the efficiencies and related to the IT consolidation that we passed in the last budget. And so you can see the total of that for the biennium is reducing the general fund appropriation by a little over $7 million. And there are a couple of riders in the bill on page 6 of Article 1 for the Office of Enterprise Technology. This is a rider that we've had in for the last couple bienniums, just dealing with charging fees for public TV broadcasts and that. And then there's another item which also shows up on the spreadsheet when we move down to the non-general fund statutory items, the first of which is the e-government public-private partnership, and there is language in the bill. This was a governor's rec and was also language contained in Senator Wicklund's bill, Senate File 804. And then the next item is the IT consolidation cash flow. There is a rider on page 7 that authorizes the commissioner of MMB to provide cash flow assistance to the Office of Enterprise Technology up to $110 million for the biennium, and then requires them to pay back with interest within the biennium. So there is not a cost to this item, since it will be paid back. And then next, moving down to the Department of Administration, there are some change items down on line 283 for the LEAN program. They're adding a couple staff there, and this is the program that works with state agencies to reduce cost and eliminate duplication. Next is on line 289 under the Environmental Quality Board. The governor's proposal was to transfer the functions of this board from the Department of Administration to the PCA, and so the funding is being removed out of the Department of Administration's base for that. And there is language making the transfer that will be in the Economic Development and Environment Bill. And here we do have a rider in there kind of referencing that on page 8, Article 1, that just talks about the transfer. And since that bill hasn't been introduced yet, we don't have a Senate file in there, so that's why there would be a blank there.
So what happens if the bill, which hasn't been introduced, isn't enacted?
Well, at this point, we've taken the money out of the base, and the governor did do an executive order to transfer these functions in fiscal year 13. So I imagine that would continue operating under the executive order that he made.
Ms. James, in drafting the bill, maybe I should direct this to Mr. Bodden. I'm not sure which council, but I'm not sure if I've seen language that we've had in the omnibus bills before. Maybe that we've done it before at some point, where we reference the Senate file if enacted. Anybody want to?
Mr.
Bodden?
Chairman, the language you see on lines 8.3 to 8.6 has been used from time to time in various circumstances. I'm not sure if you have an executive order in place that already accomplishes the transfer, whether this reference would be necessary. It's helpful in explaining what's happening, but it doesn't really have any operative effect as far as the transfer of duties.
Well, that being the case, wouldn't this be a little bit better if we simply eliminate that language, since we do have the executive order? Senator Saxhog, do you have any?
I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other.
So, Mr. Bond, why don't you suggest how would we simply eliminate the last part of it?
Mr. Chairman, I think you can just delete lines 8.3 to 8.6.
Okay.
So moved.
Senator Saxhog moves to delete that section. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Lundeen.
Okay. And then, let's see, we can move on to the next page of the spreadsheet. The next change item is showing up on line 330. This is the small agency resource team. This is the team that provides human resources and financial management assistance to small agencies. And so this is being expanded $185,000 a year to provide this assistance to more of the small agencies, boards, and councils. And then moving down to line 350, the change item there, this is for placing a bust of Nellie Stone Johnson in the Capitol building. This is Senate File 158. This was a bill of Senator Latz that we heard in the division, and there's a one-time appropriation of $30,000. And there is language in the bill for this on page 7, Article 1, that deals with this appropriation. And then turning to the next page of the spreadsheet, page 8, there's another change item, line 368, under the financial management and reporting section. The Department of Administration requested an internal auditor, and so this is funding that function, which they had not had somebody in that position previously. And then moving down under fiscal agent, line 382, I just want to point out the governor did have a change item related to the capital renovation for the rent loss and relocation. That proposal has been moved to the Capital Investment Committee to keep it together with whatever may be done bonding-wise for the capital renovation. And then we move down to public broadcasting, starting on line 390. And I should point out there are riders in the bill that deal with the distribution of the funds for these items. The first is public television, and the A1 amendment that we adopted changed the distribution of the funds a bit between the fiscal years. It didn't increase the funding, and it still made the new funding remains one-time funding. Moving down to public radio on line 402, the community service grants and equipment grants for AMPRs were increased by $500,000 one-time money. Moving to the next page of the spreadsheet, page 9, line 415 at the top, Minnesota Public Radio, there was an increase funding put in there of one-time $500,000. And then also increase that went into the base. This was included in the governor's budget. And this was an increase for some infrastructure support related to the emergency alert system and the Amber alert system. And so that's $120,000 a year that goes into the base. And then next on the spreadsheet, line 437, we get to the Capital Area Architectural Board. There were no increases in funding there. Base funding was included in the bill. Line 450, we get down to Minnesota Management and Budget. And if we turn to the next page, page 10, we get to the first change item. There are riders starting on page 9 of the bill, Article 1, that are detailing some of these items that have been funded, the first of which is the statewide budget systems development. And this is basically to replace the current fiscal note system we have, replace the capital budget system that we currently have, and then to deal with the next phases of the BPAS system, which had come online this year.
And Mr. Lundeen, or maybe Senator Sackler, so how far along is everything with this implementation? Do we assume it'll proceed smoothly at this point, or...?
I think so. The phase 2 and 3 of the BPAS will deal with the supplemental budget. include legislative tracking in there, salary projections, and deal with the way they load stuff out of the accounting system into the budget system, and hopefully provide monthly revenue updates in the system, and then make the departmental earnings part of the system.
Go ahead, Ms. Lynn.
Okay. Okay, so if we move down on the spreadsheet to line 490, there's a couple of change items there. The first of which is related to the Compensation Council recs, and there is language in the bill. There's a separate article dealing with those recommendations that we'll get to later. This was a bill of Senator Pappas's that we heard in the division, Senate File 1534. And there is language in under MMB, starting on line 10.13 on page 10 of the bill. And what we have provided here is an appropriation of $2.5 million to pay for the costs of the Compensation Council increases that are in Article 7 of the bill. And this is only for executive branch agencies and constitutional officers. This does not include any funding for legislative pay increases. And then within this $2.5 million, there is $200,000 that is earmarked for the compensation study that is in Article 7, Section 10 of this bill. And then we further have a little more language starting on 1029 that deals with if there's money left over after the Compensation Council increases have been put into place, that the commissioner of MMB may use some of this money, the leftover money, and transfer it to the state agencies to fund any of the compensation costs due to the recent collective bargaining agreements.
Yeah. And just a comment for committee members. First of all, Mr. Fraser, who chaired the Compensation Council, is present and can answer questions directly relative to any recommendations of the council. Some of us, Senator Miller was a member of the Compensation Council, Senator Rest and myself for the Senate members. What's interesting about this appropriation, and obviously the work done and the recommendations from the council came subsequent to the presentation of the governor's budget. So the governor didn't, it's interesting, the governor didn't recommend the compensation for the executive branch because obviously the council hadn't made recommendations. But I know a number of us have heard from a lot of the commissioners as to some of the significant difficulty they're having, not just relative to themselves, but to the inability to hire folks in non-commissioner positions. And there was some extensive testimony presented at the council relative to that. Mr. Lundeen.
Okay, and then continuing on the change items back to the spreadsheet on line 492, we have included the governor's recommendation for the enterprise-wide results management. This is a program with the Management Analysis Division in MMB, and it's to work with state agencies to kind of deal with ways to coordinate reporting strategies, performance measures, and provide that sort of training to state agencies. The next item on line 493 is a rec that the governor included, the Enterprise Talent Management System, which is not included in this bill. This was basically to replace the current system dealing with job applicants and resumes and that sort of thing. And then if we, moving forward on the spreadsheet, we can move forward to page 11 and the Department of Revenue. And there were some change items starting down on line 564. The Department of Revenue did include some reductions in their budget. They had, with their new tax system online and that, had gotten some efficiencies in their budget, so that is picked up in this bill of a little over $2 million for the biennium. Taxpayer assistance grants were increased. Currently, there's $200,000 in the base each year, so this brings that up to $400,000. And there is language, there is a rider in the bill on page 12 dealing with the taxpayer assistance grants. And then the next is the electronic wage levy payments and disclosures. But there's language in the bill requiring this, and this does also provide some efficiencies to the agency. And so there is a reduction in their base reflected on the spreadsheet of $448,000 for the biennium. The governor included language in his bill, which was picked up for the county technical assistance grants. That's the $300,000. There is language related to this on page 11 of the bill. And this is just one-time funding, and this is basically to help with the county cover some of the costs with the Department of Revenue coming up with a new electronic process for county property tax data. And then moving to the next page of the spreadsheet, there is another change item down on line 587. This is just more of the efficiencies that the department has realized with the new tax system and other changes they've made. And so that was a reduction to the base in the debt collect management program of a little over $2.7 million for the biennium. Then moving down on the spreadsheet to line 604, there is an appropriation. This is the base appropriation for the Gambling Control Board. This appropriation does not come from the general fund. This is a special revenue appropriation from the lawful gambling regulation account. Next on the spreadsheet on line 613 is the Minnesota Racing Commission. This is also a special revenue appropriation from the racing and card playing account. Moving to page 13 of the page 13 of the spreadsheet, we have the state lottery there. We do not appropriate their operating budget, but we do provide a cap in the budget bill, which shows up on page 13 of the bill. And this is basically the governor's recommended level of $30.5 million per year. Next on the spreadsheet, we have the Amateur Sports Commission on line 623. There is an increase to the base budget there of $30,000 a year. Then moving down to the Black Minnesotans Council, there is an increase there of $125,000 a year. Moving down to line 639, the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, their base budget is increased also another $125,000 a year. Moving down to the Asian Pacific Council on line 647, they are increased also their base by $125,000 a year. Line 655, the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council is also increased by $125,000 a year. There is a rider on page 13 of the bill. This is a typical rider that we've had in past years that just earmarks the amount of money that goes for the cultural resources specialist. And this is money that's within the base. Next on the spreadsheet, down on line 664, we get to the Minnesota Historical Society. And if we turn the page to page 14, at the top are the change items. The first of which is an increase for the Minnesota Forest History Center, which is one of the history sites in Minnesota. And then also we've included $150,000 a year to expand education outreach. And there are is rider language on page 14 of the bill that talks about these two items. And then there is also standard language that starts on 13 and continues. Actually, I guess it starts at the top of 14 that's been in the bill for a number of years dealing with charging fees or not charging fees for tours at the Capitol. And then if we move down to line 682 under the fiscal agents, there are some increases that have been included here. The Minnesota Air National Guard is increased $20,000 up to bring it up to $34,000 for that grant, and that is included in the base. The Hockey Hall of Fame is increased $32,000 a year, bringing up their yearly grant to $100,000, and the Minnesota Military Museum is increased by $70,000, And this was a bill of Senator Gazelka's that we heard. And so the bill is paying for a half-time archivist, and that's just one-time money within the biennium. And then we're bringing the base up to what it had previously been, $100,000.
And Senator Tomasoni, if I could just inquire, the Hockey Hall of Fame, is the grant increase, is that the interactive exhibit on your career? Is that
Mr. Chairman, you know, the older we get, the better we were.
I know that's been – you've indicated that's been in the plans for the Hall of Fame for quite a while.
They didn't have any video when I played, Mr. Chairman, so there isn't anything interactive.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
I was going to go there, but I passed.
You converted those minor penalties.
Something about an induction presentation is what we were going to be.
I'm sure we'll all be invited.
It would be a reduction.
Yeah. Reduction.
Mr. Chair, I was going to tell Senator Ingebrigtsen, that comes up with the USS Minnesota in the induction. And
yeah, right.
Okay, and then moving on the spreadsheet, line 719, we get to the Minnesota Arts Board. And if we turn to the next page, 15 of the spreadsheet, there's one small change down on line 742, the Regional Arts Council, an increase of $61,000 a year, bringing up the appropriation for the Regional Arts Councils to $2.2 million a year. Next, on line 758 is the Humanities Center, and there are two change items there. The governor included an operating budget increase, which was picked up in this bill, and then there's also a one-time grant for Everybody Wins, which is a children's reading program. This was Senate File 750, a bill that we heard from Senator Pappas in division. And then also on page 15 of Article 1, there is a rider related to that grant appropriation. Next, on line 787, we get down to the Board of Accountancy. And there was a change item there. Senate File 86 was a bill of Senator Rest that we heard that made some changes, statutory changes, related to CPAs, and then also included a fee increase in the bill. And so here what is reflected is the increased appropriation that the board was asking for, the $256,000 starting in fiscal year 15. And then moving to the next page of the spreadsheet on line 16, the Board of Architectural Engineering, there was no change in the base appropriation there. Next on line 803 is the Board of Cosmetology. There were two bills here. Language was included in the bill. One was Senate File 770. This was Senator Johnson's bill dealing with continuing education requirements. There was a small request in the appropriation related to some computer programming costs and that, which is included. And then there was another bill, Senate File 1106, which was Senator Metzen's bill, dealing with the inspections and investigations, some changes in statute, and then also some fee changes. And so the appropriation there that they requested for those changes was $300,000 a year added to the base. And then moving down to the Board of Barber Examiners, there was a change there too, Senate File 1055, which was Senator Peterson's bill, that made some changes in there. And so the appropriation was increased by $60,000 a year for that. And then moving next down on the spreadsheet is the contingent accounts, and there's the normal rider on how that those dollars are distributed starting on page 15 of the bill and continuing on 16, but that was all continued at the base level. The same with the tort claims was continued at the base level, and there's a rider language on page 16 related to that. Next, we get to the base appropriations for the various retirement systems. And these are the statutory forecasted amounts that are included here in the bill. There isn't any new dollars in there related to the pension bill. And so the first is just dealing with MSRS, the the legislators' retirement and constitutional officers' retirement fund. On line 843 is the appropriation to PARA for the Minneapolis MRF appropriation. And then there are the, moving to the next page, on line 849 on page 17, there are the various TRA appropriations, two of which go to TRA and then the St. Paul and the Duluth teachers. And then moving down next on the spreadsheet, 856, we get to the Department of Military Affairs. There was one change in their base budget down on line 888. This was Senate File 1124, a bill authored by Senator Reinhart, and it is dealing with a grant for the USS Minnesota Commissioning. On page 18 of Article 1 is the appropriation language there, talking about a match to this grant and so forth. Moving over to page 18 of the spreadsheet and moving down to the Department of Veterans Affairs and going over to the next page, we'll get to the change items, page 19. One of the items that the governor had requested in his bill was a veteran's license plate. The governor had language in his bill setting up a special revenue account called the Support Our Veterans account and depositing funding from these license plates into this account. This language was not included in this bill, nor did we set up the Support Our Veterans account. And then moving down to some of the general fund change items, the first is dealing with IT healthcare improvement, and this is both for the administrative agency side and then also related to the homes. And it's just dealing with disaster recovery, upgrading their network connections and their infrastructure and making sure they're compliant with HIPAA and CMS and things like that. The second item is the Southwest Minnesota Veterans Cemetery. This is a cemetery in Fillmore County. And I should point out the riders to these items all start on page 19 and continue over to page 20 and 21 of Article 1 of the bill. The next item is the Honor Guard funding. This was a bill that we heard from Senator Nelson and also was included in the governor's rec. And this is making permanent the Honor Guard funding. Previously, we provided some one-time funding at a lesser amount for this. The next item is the County Veteran Service Officers grant increase. The governor did include this. Senator Chamberlain also had a bill, Senate File 536, that funded it at a higher level than this. The level reflected in the bill of the grants is what the governor had provided in his bill. And then moving down, we get next is the GI Bill expansion. And what's reflected here is just the administrative costs to the department of $100,000 a year. There is currently in the base another $100,000, but that money is transferred to the Office of Higher Education for the administrative costs of the GI Bill. And then we move down to the Gold Star program. This was also included in the bill we heard from Senator Nelson, and the governor did include this as well, and so this is making permanent funding available in the base. And then we get down to the Minnesota Assistance Council Veterans Grant. This was also a bill we heard of Senator Chamberlain, Senate File 55, and this is increasing the base funding by $250,000 for the biennium. There's currently $500,000 in the base, and the new funding is just for this biennium, so it's one time. And then moving down on the spreadsheet, we get down to under the open appropriations, line 972. The governor had a proposal to have a scratch-off lottery ticket for veterans and then to transfer this money into the Support Our Veterans account that he set up. But as I mentioned previously, we did not set up the Support Our Veterans account. However, we did have language in here authorizing the scratch-off and instead had the money transferred into the existing Support Our Troops special revenue account. And there is language contained later in the Vets and Military Affairs article of this bill that kind of details some more that we'll get to later on how that exactly operates. And then moving down on line 975, dealing with the GI Bill, what's reflected here, the increase of $400,000, that's due to the expansion in this bill to all generations of veterans to the GI Bill, and this is a forecasted appropriation. So the numbers aren't showing up in the bill. There is statutory authority for it, but this is the estimate of how much this program will cost with the changes in the bill. And then moving down to line 980, we get to the veterans' homes. And if you look on page 21 of Article 1, when we give the general fund appropriation to Vets Affairs, what they do is transfer this into a special revenue account for the vets' homes. And there's language on page 21, 21.5, starting on line 21.5, that authorizes this transfer into the special revenue fund. And that's where they manage all the federal money and the client money that they get for the home operations. And then also the healthcare IT improvement is showing up on line 992 that I referenced earlier. And then if we turn to the next page of the spreadsheet, line 20, there is a change item. There's actually a cancellation of a previous appropriation made back in 2009 for a grant, Minnesota Ambulance Association grant. So those funds are no longer needed. So there's approximately 110 remaining of that unspent. So we have language in here just to cancel those dollars back to the general fund. And then if we move down the spreadsheet to line 1013, you can see the direct appropriations that are contained in the bill laid out by fund. And if we turn to the next page of the spreadsheet, page 21, here are some of the, starting at the top on line 1033, are some of the impacts to general fund revenues. As I mentioned, the audit enterprise fund was not included in this bill. There was an item from the Department of Revenue, which there is language in a later article that requiring people to make electronic payments or continue making electronic payments if they once have. It brings in a slight bit of revenue of $3,000 a year to the general fund. Then the next item are the three licensing board bills that I talked about. There were fee increases in there. So the accountancy board increase in Senate File 86 that's contained in here brings in $237. And the cosmetology board brings in $700 a year to the general fund, and the barbers bring in $31,000 to the general fund. And those are all non-dedicated receipts that are just put into the general fund, and then we make a general fund appropriation. And then there's a few just non-general fund revenues here that I kind of talked through as we went through the various agencies related to the state auditor and the Small Cities and Towns Accounting System, to OET, their public-private partnership. I mentioned we didn't do the veterans license plate. And then there is also language in the bill dealing with the auto theft surcharge, which is basically just transferring some language from public safety over to the Department of Revenue, and this has to do with the collection of the surcharge. Currently, they have an interagency agreement to do this, so this is just kind of cutting out the interagency agreement and moving the language over. And they forecast that with this, there may be some efficiencies, so in the tails going into this auto theft surcharge may be a $100,000 increase. And so moving down the spreadsheet, down to the bottom, On line 1063, we were given a target of $26,119,000 over the base, and that is what is included in this bill, so there's nothing on the bottom line in this biennium. The tails were given a target increase of 16.8 million, and we have 188,000 in the tails on the bottom line. And that is the spreadsheet.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lundin. Are there questions for Mr. Lundin relative to the spreadsheet? Sir Anderson.
Mr. Chair, on the amendment that was put on page, it says page 28, delete section 7, but it doesn't mention anything about which section 7 carries over to, and I'm wondering if the effective date that's on there, has that been deleted also?
Yes.
Mr. Bodern or Mr.
Mr. Chairman, all that's necessary is to reference the section itself. You don't need to reference all of the pages the section appears on, simply the one where the section begins. So the entire section has been removed.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bodern, the effective date has been removed.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, questions again for Mr. Lundin on the spreadsheet. If not, Sir Saxog, did you want Ms. James to go through the bill?
Yes, Ms. James would go over the language. That would be terrific.
Okay, great. Ms. James.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll begin with Article 2. Article 2 begins on page 21 at line 31. Article 2 repeals the Sunset Act. The meat of the repealer, the whole repealer, is on page 24, lines 20 through 24. The rest of this article are conforming amendments. Article 3 begins on page 24 at line 27. This article contains a variety of state government operation provisions dealing with OET, the Department of Administration, the State Auditor, and the Secretary of State. Sections 1 and 2 are from Senate File 910, Senator Dietzick's bill. This gives the Secretary of State the authorization to accept funds from outside sources for a couple of different projects. Section 1, the project is the state's election system, IT projects, and Section 2 is for the address confidentiality program, the Safe at Home program. Both of these sections have the money from those from the outside money deposited in accounts in the Special Revenue Fund, and then they're appropriated to the Secretary of State. Section 3 begins on page 25, line 33. This is Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 255. And this allows the state auditor to charge a one-time fee to cities and towns to charge them to use the small city and town accounting software system. This language is slightly different than it came out of the division in the document that was approved by the division, and the reason for that is that in the version of the omnibus bill that came out of division, we had included an older version of this CTAS provision. Earlier in division, when this bill was heard on its own, the division had made modifications, and we had failed to include the most that approved language. So it's modified here from the way it came out of division to account for that. Sections 4 through 16 are from Senator Wicklund's bill, Senate File 804, with certain changes that I'll note. Sections 4 and 6 change when data is made public during the public bidding during the bidding process on state contracts.
Yes.
Section 5 narrows the definition of resident vendor for purposes of eligibility for a preference in bidding on state contracts. Section 7 is deleted in the author's amendment. Section 8 on page 29, beginning at line 13, allows the Commissioner of Administration to enter into service contracts for less than $5,000 without making the determinations that are otherwise required, including the determination that no current state employee is able and available to perform the work. Section.
Chair.
Sarah Goodwin.
Did you want to ask questions as she goes along, or wait till the end?
No, certainly. If you have questions.
Okay, I'm concerned about 8 and 9. I understand now that they don't have to give the legislature and the contract the information about contracts and how much they've spent by agency, and I understand that looks like it's going to be available on computer. But for a lot of people, that's public information that should be available in ways that people that don't go on the computer can look at. And that information has been very valuable to me over the years as I've studied the increases in professional technical contracts. So I am concerned about Section 8. And, again, with Section 9, that section was, in fact, both of these two sections were hard fought for several years ago to make sure that if an employee is available, they can do the job. And if it's a $5,000 ceiling before they have to start doing that, there's a lot of jobs that could be done with current state employees that are maybe underemployed right now and have the time. And so I think that's a mistake. I know it's a little extra work for the department, but it certainly is worth it for saving money and giving public information. So Section 8 and 9 are problematic to me. Can you tell me the how we got that in there and why?
Sarah Sasko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's only for contracts under $5,000.
Yeah, I understand that.
Ms. James, do you have any other?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxhagen, members, I believe that Senator Goodwin is referring to not quite the right section numbers. So I think the first issue that she raised was really with respect to Section 7, which is on page 28 at line beginning at line 10, and that was removed in the author's amendment.
Yeah, I understand that, but no, I am talking about Section 8 and 9. Section 8 eliminates the requirement that a Department of Administration has to have a report on all the contracts executed for professional and technical services. That's normally given to the chairs of the committee and to the legislative reference library so that they have that information that's available for the public. And it looks like it's replacing it because it's going to be made in the new statewide accounting and procurement system. I don't think that's going to be a manageable system for somebody from the public to go in and take a look at that. And we currently don't have hardly any oversight of state contracts, and we have billions of dollars worth of state contracts. So it is worth having as much information as we can, and that's still never, you know, that's we still need a lot more than what that report gave us, but at least we had that report. And then, again, on Section 9, then it says, of course, that they don't have to see if they have a state employee available if the contracts aren't in excess of $5,000. They might have an employee available that can do some IT work or something that they need that has those skills, and they should have to at least. It's very cursory oversight to see if they could have somebody available. They don't make a huge effort and go out there and look at every agency or anything, but they do have to currently see if somebody that's already getting paid by the state can do the job before they send it out. It could be misnumbered. It's on page 4, the summary that I'm looking at.
Ms. James.
Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin, it sounds like the summary that you're looking at is not the most recent version of the summary.
That's the one I have.
There is a newer version, and that has the right numbering.
Okay.
So the reporting requirement is in Section 7 of the bill, and that's on page 28, beginning at line 10, and that's been removed in the author's amendment. And then Section 8 has the exemption for contracts less than $5,000. It has the exemption so that they wouldn't need to make that determination about no current state employees. And Section 9 then has provides for allows the Commissioner of Administration to not follow the full solicitation process for contracts for goods and services less than $5,000.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Then all I was citing was the wrong sections, because the rest of the information I just gave is correct. And not only is it about state employees, whether or not they are available to do the job, but they also have to report that the work to be performed under the contract is necessary to the agency's achievement. That's going to change that. The contract will not establish an employment relationship. That's going to change that. The contractor and agents are not employees of the state. That's going to change that. So all of these things, many things here, are going to be changed by changing that value to $5,000 and over. I think that's significant. So I would like to make a motion to delete those two sections.
Well, Sir Goodwin, could I ask, maybe we could let Ms. James finish going through the bill, and let's have amendments. Then we'll conclude discussion of the bill, if that's okay with you.
Thank you.
Ms. James?
Mr. Chair, members, then moving on to Section 10, which is on page 30, beginning at line 15. This section provides that state agencies are not required to include non-visual technology access standards for the procurement of information technology. Section 11, beginning on page 31, line 7, Section 11 and Section 12 both allow the Commissioner of Administration to advertise certain contracts in a manner of his choosing instead of publishing them in the State Register. Section 11 applies to design-build contracts, and Section 12 applies to construction manager-at-risk contracts. Section 13, which is on page 33, beginning at line 15, is slightly different wording than was in Senator Wicklund's original Senate File 804. This requires state agencies with an information or technology telecommunications project to determine the IT portion of the project and to transfer that amount to OET. Section 14, which is on page 33, beginning at line 21, sections 14 through 16, are involve a convenience fee for the North Star and online government information systems. This authorizes OET to charge a convenience fee of up to $2 per transaction. The exact amount of the fee will be determined with the advice of an e-government advisory council that's established in Section 16. That's on page 34, beginning at line 20. Then moving on to page 35, Section 17 begins on line 24. And this section and the next section, Section 18, are from Senator Rest's bill, Senate File 191. And these shift auditing responsibilities from the state auditor to the legislative auditor for the Dairy Council in Section 17 and for the Job Z program in Section 18. On page 36, at line 9, is a revisor's instruction. This changes the name of the Office of Enterprise Technology to the Office of Minute Services. And then we get to Article 4 on page 36. There are provisions in here that are from the licensing boards, from three licensing boards, from the Board of Barber Examiners, from the Board of Cosmetologist Examiners, and from the Board of Accountancy. Sections 1 through 18 are from Senator Peterson's bill, Senate File 1055, and this is from the barbers. And these sections establish some new fees, and they make some changes to examination practice for barbers and instructors, and they make it a petty misdemeanor to place a barber pole where it creates an impression that a business is a barbershop if it's not properly licensed. And then sections 19, it's beginning with section 19 on page 43. Yeah, section 19, beginning on page 43 at line 28. These are provisions regarding the Board of Cosmetologists, and this is sections 19 through 30, and then some uncodified sections at the end. Some of these provisions are from Senator Metzen's bill, Senate File 1106, and others are from Senator Johnson's bill, Senate File 770. Senator Johnson's bill created continuing education requirements for cosmetologists and nail technicians and aestheticians and salon managers. and the requirements are 4 hours every 3 years. Senator Metzen's provisions make some changes to the practices that are appropriate for cosmetologists and make some licensing changes. Sections 31 through 35, beginning on page 49, point and at line 5. So sections 31 and then an uncodified section at the end are from Senator Rest Bill, Senate File 86. And these provisions are from the Board of Accountancy. And they put in a fee schedule into statute that had been in rules. And then they make the timing of license renewals and reporting requirements for continuing education requirements a little different than they had been, putting everything on an annual schedule. And then that gets us to the uncodified sections at the end. Section 36, which begins on page 55 at line 29, grants the Board of Cosmetology a good cause exemption from rulemaking in order to modify its rules to reflect the changes made in statute here. Page 56, beginning at line 1, is a revisor's instruction regarding cosmetologists. And then the repealer, beginning on page 56 at line 4, is mostly, it's all cleanup. Line 7 there takes out of rules the accountancy fees that are put in place in statute here. And then we get to Article 5, which is the military and veterans provisions. Section 1, beginning on page 56 at line 10, is Senator Sparks' bill, Senate File 1119. And this allows employees to take their paid military leave of 15 days, the authorized military leave. It allows them to take it at any time during the year and also allows them to take it all in one chunk of time. On page 57... beginning at line 5, sections 2 through 6 and 11 are from Senator Chamberlain's file, Senate File 536, although the amounts are different. And this involves the County Veterans Service Officer Program. And this bill, it was also in the governor's bill. It establishes grants to counties of $5,000 for all counties and then an additional grant based on population. There's a cap that's based on population. It also makes these grants annual instead of on a rotating three-year schedule, which and you'll see a repealer later at the end of the bill that accomplishes that. Page 59, starting at line 1, sections 7 and 8 here are the from the governor's bill. This is the expansion of the GI Post-Secondary Education Assistance Program. This makes these benefits under this program available to veterans, to all veterans, instead of just the veterans who served since 9/11. And it also makes the benefits available to certain spouses and children of veterans who died in service or sustained a service-related disability. On page 61... beginning at line 16 is Section 9. This is Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 628, and this establishes a veterans home in Beltrami County. And then on page 61, beginning at line 27, this is from the governor's bill. It is a special scratch-off game where the proceeds from the game go into the Support Our Troops account. And then, as I mentioned, the repealer on page 62, beginning at line 14, is related to the County Veterans Service Officer Program and is housekeeping. Article 6 is the Revenue Department article, and there are three things going on in this article. One is that there was a lease that was paid off for some equipment, and so the appropriation for that is no longer necessary. Also, the auto theft program, as Mr. Lundeen mentioned, is being moved from public safety into the Department of Revenue, and so there are changes related to that, although the language is essentially copied from a different part of statute into the Revenue Department chapters. And then the third thing that's going on in these in Article 6 is a requirement that taxes be remitted electronically. In current law, these batch of taxes, there's a whole host of them, have to be remitted electronically in the year that a certain threshold is reached and then in the year following that. And the changes here make that requirement to remit electronically in the year that the threshold is reached and then in all years thereafter. And the taxes that are affected by that are employer withholding. That's in section 4 on page 65, beginning at line 30. The sales and use tax, which is in section 5. That's on page 67, beginning at line 3. The corporate taxes on page 69. That's section 6 of the bill at line 11. Healthcare provider taxes on page 69, section 7, page 69, line 21. And then on line 29, section 8, the cigarette and tobacco taxes. The brewers, imported, and wholesalers excise taxes, that's section 9 of the bill. Insurance taxes and surcharges are in section 12, and a landfill tax in section 13. And the repealers on page 72, the first one, paragraph A, is the removal of the auto theft recovery program sections in the public safety part of the statutes, and then the paragraph B is an appropriation for that lease that is paid off. And that gets us to Article 7, the Compensation Council Bill. Section 1, and this reflects many of the recommendations of the Compensation Council, although several provisions have been changed, were changed in division, or not included. Section 1, I should note, we don't include the judiciary salaries here. That'll be carried in the judiciary bill. So Section 1, beginning on page 72 at line 10, sets the salary of each member of the legislature at 33% of the salary that's authorized for the governor. Sections 2, 4, and 7 allow, and Section 2 begins on page 73 at line 5. This allows the governor to set salaries for agency heads within a range without needing to get approval of the Legislative Coordinating Council. Section 3 on page 73, line 26, was added in division. This makes annual adjustments to the governor's salary based on CPI, and the author's amendment that we adopted earlier changes the language of that a little bit to the way that we cite to the Consumer Price Index. Section 4, beginning at the bottom of page 73, is one of those that is associated with and cleans up. It's a housekeeping thing after the provision that I described earlier, Section 2, that allows the governor to set salary for agency heads without needing LCC approval. Section 5, on page 74, beginning at line 6, changes the maximum percent, the maximum salary for agency heads in Group 1. So many of the larger agencies heads are here, and this changes their maximum to 133% of the salary of the governor from 95% of the salary of the governor, as was already in statute. On page 75, at the very bottom of 74 and then going on to 75, Section 6 does the same sort of increase for Group 2 salary heads, salary limits. It changes the cap from 85% to 120% for the officials identified there. Section 7, beginning on page 75 at line 13, is the third of those that deals with the change to allowing the governor to set salaries within a certain range for his appointees. On page 76, Section 8, beginning at line 26, is a provision that was added in division, and this removes legislators from the Compensation Council, although it still allows the Speaker of the House and the Minority Leader in the House and the Majority Leader in the Senate and the Minority Leader of the Senate to appoint members. not legislative members. And then on page 77, section 9 begins at line 5, and this removes this was a limit for all employees of an agency to not be able to make more than the agency head, and this eliminates that cap for the employees. And then on page 77, at line 21.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, on that employee cap, what's the reason for that, or why would we, if a commissioner's making the top salary, this I assume allows us to pay employees more than that. What's the reason and what's the need?
Senator Saxhausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Westrom. I think the reasoning there was that, Mr. Schroeder, who was on the Compensation Council, kind of made this clear to us in the committee hearings that he appeared, is that in some instances in different departments, to get the type of expertise you need, it's just plain the people on the market cost more, and their compensation needs to be more than what the commissioner's making.
So
I don't have an example, but that's the reasoning.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer that a little bit more if you don't mind, Senator Saxhawk. We could give an example of Commissioner Zelli, who was the CEO of Jefferson Lines, and he took a significant salary drop to be Commissioner of Transportation. I think he was retired. It was a new challenge for him. And our political appointees are often more willing to sacrifice salary because they feel like they want to do this as to give back or for public service. The problem comes right beneath them. We have a large problem with compression, where you have assistant commissioners or directors of divisions who are within a dollar of each, even though some may have more years of experience, because they're captured under that cap of the commissioner and the governor's salary. And we're having all the commissioners have come and told us they're having a great deal of problems attracting talent to work for the state of Minnesota because of this salary cap issue. So the Compensation Council took that into consideration in their recommendations.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Westrom.
And Senator Saxhawk, I appreciate that issue. My concern is we take the pressure off of kind of keeping a standard or a baseline in place. I think back to the late 90s when we used to have superintendents of schools and presidents of our MNSCU campuses tied to the governor's salary, and we lifted that. And the net result was it wasn't just a few superintendents that now were getting more than the governor. It's a lot of superintendents getting more than the governor. And I think having that natural pressure to raise the governor's salary to keep that in line with the market and commissioner's salary is potentially a good thing. And so I don't know if there's a way to limit it, but my fear is that Katie bar the door once we take this tie off, because I think we've seen it with superintendent salaries across the state. We've seen it with some golden parachutes, quote unquote, paid out with much greater salaries than the governors ever made, and just to run a school system, which is an important thing. But I think having that tie that we used to have keeps some pressure in the system back and forth, but it also keeps things in check, and so that's my concern.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Westrom. There are still those checks in law, because we do have in law salary ranges. So we do have limits. It's just those limits are no longer tied to the salary of the governor. And let me give you just one example of the difficulty with tying that. The governor has not had an increase in his salary for 14 years. So I think we've tried that method for the last 14 years. His salary is currently $120,000. If it had even been indexed, it would be $156,000 now. When we look at salaries of governors across the country, our governor is definitely at the bottom of the pack. So you may find, like I said, you may find a governor like this governor who's independently wealthy, who doesn't really care about his salary. But if you ever want anyone else to be governor or to be a commissioner or to work for state government that is looking at, you know, I can work in the private sector and make this amount of money for my family, for my future, whatever, for my children, or I could sacrifice and work for state government. I mean, that really does limit your pool of people that you can attract. Not only the best and the brightest are only concerned about public service. A lot of them also feel like they want to be appropriately compensated.
Mr. Chair, just on that point, and that's the tension or the pressure that I think should be kept in place, and then we as the legislature should be raising those compensation packages more often than every 15 or 20 years. But I think by keeping them in place, you keep more pressure so everything stays in balance. Giving this exemption, we just probably exacerbate the problem because there will be less pressure for the governor's salary to go up because everybody else has went up anyways, and so that's my point. But enough, Mr. Chair.
Chair and Senator Westrom, I think that Senator Pappas' point of the compression that's going on right now is the real point. Is as soon as that pressure is off and you do have that higher range, I think that private enterprise will take care of the rest.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just adding to the discussions a little bit, you know, this is certainly a dynamic present in the Department of Transportation, not with the commissioner necessarily, but with the managerial staff and the engineering, the engineers at Transportation. I don't understand fully, you know, how this one level of salary is tied to the next as you move down the org chart at the Department of Transportation, and I appreciate Section 11 that has the compensation study for managerial personnel in state government. And I'm hoping that this allows us then also to get to the engineering staff and others actually in Department of Transportation, because that is a real issue with hanging on to good professionals in that agency.
Ms. James.
Mr. Chair, members, moving on. Section 10 on page 77, line 21, this removes a cap on the amount that can be paid in an unusual employment situation. Page 78, section 11, on beginning at line 14, is, as Senator Dibble mentioned, the study, commissioning of a study on compensation for managerial positions in the executive branch. And as Mr. Lundin mentioned, there's $200,000 earmarked for that study in the appropriations article. Section 12 begins page 78, line 21. It increases the governor's salary by 3% effective January 1st, 2015, and 3% on January 1st, 2016. And then the salaries of other constitutional officers are adjusted to retain their proportional relationship to the governor. And then page 78 at line 26 is a repealer of, I've forgotten what the repealer is. Oh, it was an exemption for a certain class of employees from that cap that we removed, so then the exemption is no longer necessary. And then section 14 is effective dates. I would note that the effective dates for the sections that raise the agency head salaries is effective retroactively to January 1st, 2013. And otherwise, the effective dates are the day after enactment, except for Section 13, which is the governor's increase, which doesn't kick in until 2017 because of the increases in Section 12 to the governor's salary in 15 and 16. And then the legislature increases in Section 1 have their own effective date in 2015, January 5th, 2015. For constitutional reasons, they can't go into effect until then.
Okay, further questions from Ms. James on the bill itself. Okay, if not, members, questions or amendments, Senator Newman. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very, very quickly, there was page 70. There's an automobile theft prevention surcharge that's going to go on automobile insurance policies for some kind of a program on automobile theft. That is, and what the purpose is.
Yeah. Okay. Senator Sasso.
Senator, I'm going to ask Ms. James to explain that.
Ms. James?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman and members, that is a program that's already in statute, but it's in the public safety chapters, and it's being moved to the Department of Revenue. So it's not a new charge. It's just going to be facilitated through the Department of Revenue directly now. And this language, the new language, is exactly the same as it was in the public safety
Sir Newman. Chapter.
And what does the program do? Maybe an existing live just not.
Maybe there's someone here who can give more details, but it's used. The first $1.3 million of the fees that are collected from it are put into the general fund. The rest of the money is put into a theft prevention program, auto theft prevention program.
Okay. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Saxog, the questions I have relate specifically to the compensation study again. Was there any discussion or members that were on that committee? Was there any discussion in terms of the benefit packages as well, or did it all just focus on compensation?
Mr. Chair,
Senator
Peterson, no, it reflected only on the percentages, as is reflected in here, and how you reach them, we didn't talk about benefit packages and how they might change or how they might not change. And I'm assuming they would not change other than the fact that if compensation and deferred compensation is based on increases in salary, you know, that would certainly be reflected.
Mr. Chair and Senator Saxog, I mean, I have had the privilege to serve just 3 years since 2011, and each year I've had significant contact from constituents that have significant problems or concerns about the ability for the legislator, a retired legislator or unelected legislator, to, for example, to go on and off the health benefit plan. When they get sick, they come back on. When they get healthy, they go back off. And so in the past, we've seen proposals that would change that, similar to what the judges have, where when they're done serving, they choose whether to stay on the plan and pay, or they go off the plan altogether. Another area of that I receive significant contact is the per diem that legislators receive contributing to the retirement compensation. Was there any discussion about either of those items in the compensation council?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, no.
Thank you. And Senator Peterson, as I indicated earlier, Mr. Fraser is here, who chaired the compensation council. If you have any questions about the council deliberations as opposed to the division deliberations, he can certainly answer. And relative to your question about pensions, when we hear Senator Latz's bill, there was some discussion of judicial pensions in the context of what was happening with judicial pay. But I don't think, at least, and maybe Mr. Fraser, who was there for the entirety of the Compensation Council, will agree that there was no discussion, I believe, in terms of other pension benefits.
So, Mr. Chair, I mean, from your perspective in terms of building this finance bill, I mean, is it reasonable to just look at compensation only and not look at the benefit side and the costs associated? I mean, because we just heard numerous comparisons to the private sector and not being able to recruit employees. I mean, an example that I know about personally, for example, is dump truck drivers. I hire dump truck drivers. They start at the DOT regional office in St. Cloud at $16 an hour, which is no problem, you know, for the private sector. But what the private sector can't compete with is the health and benefit package and the pension and retirement package that's available for that $16 an hour starting dump truck driver. And so I'm not sure it's fair to look at just compensation and not look at the whole package when we're recruiting top executives for the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, it'd be just speculation for me, but and of course, obviously, when we're talking about hourly contract employees in the state of Minnesota, that was a different subject that we've been dealing with. When you get into the higher compensation employees, I would guess that the private industry does very well in competition with the state of Minnesota, and that's just speculation too. If we should get Mr. Fraser up here, maybe he could make some comments on that, because I would guess that they thought about that. Would you Is that what you'd like to do?
Sure. Yeah, I would, Mr. Chair, sure. I'd appreciate that.
Okay. Mr. Fraser, if you might just identify yourself and in response to Senator Peterson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Fraser, and I was chair of the Compensation Council this year. And to address the question that's raised, I would point to the last line of Section 11, the compensation study that we proposed as sort of a longer-term solution to the compensation issues in the executive department. The independent compensation study, it provides in the last line there, page 78, lines 19 and 20, that the analysis should evaluate total compensation, including insurance, retirement, and performance pay. So I think the concept was that when we were looking at market analysis, that we would take into account all forms of compensation, including benefits and retirement.
Senator Westrom.
Chair, real briefly, I guess Ms. James maybe or Senator Saxog. Article 2 repeals Minnesota Sunset Commission. What exactly is that? When did that come out? And I'm wondering, are we repealing what I know the last few years there's been efforts to try to sunset groups that, that were supposed to be sunsetted or originally had sunsets. Is that what we're talking about, or what are we talking about there? And then I've got a couple quick follow-ups.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Westrom, it was thought in committee that the Sunset Committee, although they've done some excellent work in the last couple of years, kind of did that work on the smaller committees and the committees, the so-called lower-hanging fruit. They didn't really find any committees that needed to be eliminated. And what we saw coming up were the larger committees and a larger body of work than we thought could be handled well by that committee. We also noted that right now that we have a different setup than we have in the past, and that we have more policy chairs, and that those policy committees are well equipped to discuss and delve into how any particular commission or department is doing.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, that is basically the Sunset Act that was worked on the last 2-3 years.
That's correct, Senator Westrom. Okay.
There's a Article 4, it's charging cities for accounting software. Is that, what have they done in the past? Is this a new fee to cities or a new set of software? What are we doing with that? And then last, I'll couple this together. There's talk of a new $5 insurance surcharge to help fund pensions. That's not part of the auto theft fee that's being shifted. And or is there any new fees on insurance companies to help fund pensions in this bill? Two questions together.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, one thing at a time here. First of all, the surcharge that could be used for the pensions is not involved in this bill.
Okay.
That'll be in the pension bill.
The city's charging them for software.
Right. And then we're talking about the
Article 4.
Yeah. See, you want to say something about that, Ms. James?
Ms. James.
Do you know the history of CTAS?
Yep. Mr. Fraser, thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Fraser.
Mr. Lundeen.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we have a representative from the State Auditor's Department.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, my name is Matt Lindemann. I'm the Director of Budget, Finance, and Technology for the State Auditor's Office. The CTAS program is a program that was written back in 1990 and rewritten in 2000 that towns and small cities use to keep their finances. And the intent of this section is to allow the state auditor to collect a fee from those towns and small cities that want to continue to participate so that we can rewrite the software. It's really out of date with the changes in other technology. The program's getting to a point where it won't continue to run on future operating systems.
So, Mr. Chair, sir, are we? What's their other option if they choose not to participate? And what kind of cost are we talking for a city? I've got probably over 50 small cities that you'd be collecting from. If they all wanted to participate, just give me a range or an idea, and what's their option if they don't do this?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we're looking at charging approximately $300 per local government that wants to participate. In the market, if you look, I think the closest software program that someone could buy would be about $1,500, and then there'd be an annual fee they'd have to pay for that software. So we're looking at a significant difference in price for the small local governments.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, we got a lot of support in committee, you know, from both cities and townships for this particular program. They look at it as a very effective way to get there.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, my understanding is if they just chose, they could probably continue with their current program. To the testifier's comments, at some point it's going to become obsolete, though, and need an upgrade.
Right. This is going to be an excellent program.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Dibble, and maybe Senator Dibble, before you ask your question, let me just indicate they're going to hold the floor for us for a period of time, maybe upwards of an hour, so we can finish. Oh. And that means if people are good, we won't have to meet tonight. So just keep that in mind, Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I want to get back to Senator Newman's question about the automobile theft prevention program and surcharge. Somewhat familiar with that. I think the activities that program undertakes are, I think, some public awareness and also some grants to public safety agencies. If I'm not mistaken, I think the state vehicle is paid for with grants or different police agencies have, you know, the bait car, and it's been pretty successful from what I understand. I think, you know, State Patrol gets some grants as well to help. But what are we? Can I just understand again? What are we doing with that? We're transferring it from where to where and why?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, I'd ask Mr. Lundin to.
Mr. Lundin.
Essentially, what's happening there is we're taking the existing language out of the DPS statutes, moving it over to the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Revenue will then collect what the existing surcharges are on these items. They do it now, but they do it through an interagency agreement, and this will directly allow them to collect it. So we're making no changes. The transfers and stuff are all in existing statute, and actually we don't have the jurisdiction over those dollars. They're actually in Senator Tomasoni's committee, so we can't do anything with them.
Okay. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been traveling between education and this, so if the questions I've asked have been asked, let me know. But one is, last session we passed the benchmark review, asking that there be a benchmark analysis done on all state government functions compared to other state agencies. And then we, as part of that legislation, actually said that as part of the review, there should be recommended statutes that would be in keeping with what the analysis found. Did you hear that analysis in your committee? And were there recommendations of language changes?
Senator Saxog, or
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, no, we didn't. I don't recall doing that, hearing that.
Senator Saxog, I asked those folks who were assigned to do that analysis in February when it was due to come and present it to me because I was so involved in it and it wasn't done at that time. It's my understanding that it is done now, and so I understand that there might not be anything in your omnibus bill that relates to it, but you might consider, if you are going to have another hearing, having that analysis presented to you. I'm very curious myself. I'm going to make sure to go through it because I think it was a meaningful piece of legislation that passed. And then my other question had to do with my work on
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, Me too, and I'm take the advice.
Thank you. The other thing is, when I did my work on the Sunset Commission, there was a lot of discovery with regard to the role the Attorney General's office plays in doing background investigations. Anytime there's a complaint, the complaints are investigated by the Attorney General's office, and there's a chargeback system for their fees back to the appropriate board that they're, you know, doing that service for. And as I looked at the spreadsheet on the Attorney General's side of things, I wondered where you capture or where it's taken to into account the fees that are generated for that agency.
Sir, is that, Mr. Chair, defer to Mr. Lundin.
Okay. What I'm showing on the spreadsheet is just for the Attorney General, the direct appropriations. And included in those direct appropriations, there's the state government special revenue appropriation, which covers the health licensing boards. I mean, in addition, the Attorney General has authority. They enter into these partner agency agreements with non-general funded activities in agencies, you know, whether it be the DNR or DOT. And there is also, in addition to the state government special revenue appropriation, they do enter into another agreement. They do get some additional funds out of that state government special revenue. So it's kind of a combination of appropriations and these charges to agencies for services.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxhog, Mr. Lundin, what I guess I'm trying to understand how we have visibility of the amount of money that goes into these agencies in those kinds of relationships as revenue for them so that we make sure that our appropriations are consistent with the spread of expense versus I'm sure nobody's just sitting on a windfall, and I'm not saying that, but I think it would be important for the finance division, just like commerce is almost, you know, self-sustaining because they take in so much revenue from their funds. I know that the Attorney General's office does get significant amount of revenue from various things, too, and it just seems to me that that would be important for us to just have visibility around.
Mr. Lundin.
Yes. I mean, I can say the money that we're directly appropriating, like the general fund, is going for agency general fund activities that the AG is providing. But in the case, and I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of about $9 to $10 million in additional money that's coming in through these partner agencies, and I agree, it's not as visible. You know, a lot of times when we have these transfers going on and that, they're not as visible. But our hope is with the new budget system and that we'll be able to track a lot of these things better. And once we get, you know, more comfortable using it and working with MMB.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Ramos.
Mr. Chair, do you look at that? Do you have a sense of how much comes in those ways? And is that do you agree that that would be of interest to us?
I think it would be. You know, as Mr. Lundin indicated, I mean, part of the problem we have is with the variety of accounting systems we've had, not all information has been available. That's the hope with the update is that we'll be able to get a better handle on some of that. Would be the hope. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I know we're going to have to recess in a few minutes for session, but could I offer the A3 amendment? It's a technical amendment.
All right. Senator Pappas is offering the A3 amendment. And Senator Pappas, if I can inquire while it's being distributed, I was told that we could go for as long as an hour. Is that not correct?
After session has started?
No. Now that
until
we could.
Session. Well, I was told to go to the floor at 11:15 to start session. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing?
Something like that.
Mr. Chair, my committee starts at noon.
Senator Thomas Lennon?
My committee starts at noon.
Well, I said that there's always tonight. Okay, we've got the A3 amendment distributed, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hubinger asked, from the LCC, asked me to offer this. This would line up the effective date for elimination of the salary cap for management with the effective date for increases in the salary range for commissioners in the compensation section of the bill. So it's, I'd say it's purely technical.
Okay. Right. Senator Sagtog?
Sounds fine to me, Mr. Chair.
Okay, is there a discussion? If not, Senator Pappas moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm thinking about this amendment to this bill, and I'm going to wait because Mr. Allen told me that I would be meeting with somebody that's in charge of the SWIFT system tomorrow, so I will do that. So I just want to let you know that I may be introducing an amendment. It would have to wait till the floor, I assume, because this bill will be going out of here. But I want to talk about a couple of issues here. First, we don't know if the SWIFT system is even easy enough to get into to get this information. Another thing is when you change the amount, like 5,000 or less, 5,000 or they don't have to get approval for 5,000 or less or whatever. The thing that you're not understanding is that a lot of times with these contracts, they'll do less than a $5,000 contract, and then they'll add another 5,000 on, and it was a change order, an addendum, and then another and another. So they'll keep it going for quite some time. Currently, I just found out, too, that in our aggregate reports that we get in the library and the chairs of the committees get, the contracts under $5,000 are not even included, and possibly up to $25,000. So we don't really get the whole picture. And the reason I think we need the whole picture is because otherwise this is put in with the employees, making it look like the employees are getting all this money, and they're not. So it's put in the budget that way. It's just part of the employee side. So I think we need to be – at one time we had a line item in here that said they had to have – or we had a statute that said they had to have a line item on the contracts as well. And they never complied with it, and then they eventually managed to take it out. So I think we really do need somewhere where we can see where all the of the contracts are. I'm not against contracting. I think a lot of private contracts go to small businesses and people in Minnesota that help keep our economy going. I just want accurate information on this, so I will probably be offering something on the floor. Okay. Thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Senator Sagtog or Council could answer a question. I'm on page 34, section 16, about the e-government advisory council. And on lines, 34.26 and 34.27, says one member appointed by the Speaker of the House and one member appointed by the Senate subcommittee on committees. Are those members of the legislature or non-legislative members of the e-government advisory council?
Senator Sagtog or Ms. James?
You know?
It's intended that they be legislative members. We could clarify.
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, I'm told by Ms. James that their intention is that they be legislators. Very good point, though.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sagtog, if council could just help us maybe clarify that one member of the House of Representatives appointed by the Speaker, one member of the Senate appointed by the Senate.
Mr. Chair, that would be just fine. I think that.
We're getting information that OET wanted these people to not be members of the
legislature. Oh, okay. So we're just getting the pipeline just told me that Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, that they were not intended to be members of the legislature.
So then maybe Mr. Chair and Senator Sagtog,
we should make
one
that clear.
Non-legislative member.
Yeah, now making that clear, Mr. Chair, I think it'd be a good thing.
So you're looking to clarify to be a member of the public? Yeah. Mr. Bodden, do you want to?
Mr. Chairman and members, I think if you want to clarify that, then on page 34, line 26, after 1, insert public. And on page 34, line 27, after 1, insert public. That's the convention used to indicate non-legislative members.
Senator Miller, is that?
Sure. As long as the members, Senator Sagtog, is okay with it.
That's Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, thank you.
Okay, so Senator Miller moves the language as suggested by counsel. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion on the bill? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. Real quickly, page 48, maybe Mr. Bonner can help me here. When I see that we have prima facie evidence in statute here, brand new statute, it just catches my eye here. I'm just wondering if the penalties that are sanctions that go along here are civil or criminal. They would be civil, I'm thinking. Is it fines in regards to 150? I'm sorry, bottom of page 48. I tried to look it up on my phone, and I got to the far as the statute, but after that I...
Ms. James, or...
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not recalling whether these are fines or whether they're license revocations.
Something you can get back to me with, too, if that's fine.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we will.
Okay. Thank you. And the other question, Mr. Chair, if I could real quickly, with regards to this somewhat of a sticky wicket raising our pay issue here, and I'm not saying whether I'm for it or not, I know how much it takes to do this job and how much we get paid very well. And we talked earlier about somebody mentioned not figuring in on here the per diems that were brought. I know that's put together by the Rules Committee. I'm wondering if the Rules Committee also makes a determination if a legislator decides to actually take a reduction in pay, such as the governor or such as a legislator. I know there are some legislators that aren't taking the full pay. When they make that determination or that decision, is it something that they have to live with for their whole term? Do we know that? Or can they just all of a sudden say, well, you know what, I got to get that car now that I wanted you last year. I think I'm going to take the pay. I know that's not the case in the Senate when it comes to government shutdown, because I said it was not going to take money during the government shutdown. As it turned out to be a 20-day government shutdown, I actually had to take the whole month without pay. That was my decision. I didn't realize that I had to go the whole 31 days. So I wondered if there's any discussion about that with Mr. Frazier at all, or does anybody know if there is a raise, the legislator decides not to take it? In the Senate's position, that would be for, well, in this case, actually for 2 years. Would they be bound by that decision, or would they be able to open that up at any time?
Senator Ingebrigtsen, maybe Mr. Bottom would, I hope he wouldn't disagree, but it's my understanding, because I think there have been a couple of instances where that's happened. If a member chooses to not take pay for a month, 2 months, whatever, the member can ask the fiscal office to reinstate the pay. Mr. Bottom,
Mr. Chairman, I think that's correct.
That's just a that's handled through the fiscal office, and there's no statute, there's no rule from the Rules Committee. No. Saying that if you take one day off for a government shutdown, you have to take all 31. That's a fiscal staff determination. I'm not sounding like sour grapes here. I'm just wondering where that determination was made, where that
is. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think that was within the Senate administration as to how that was handled. I don't think there's anything in the statute. Senator Stumpf.
I'll pass. I think my question got answered.
Okay, Mr. Bodden.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to take you back to the amendment on page 34. There's some conforming changes that need to be made if, in fact, the members of the E-Government Advisory Council are to be public members. If you look at page 34, line 34, the appointments reference the first appointed House member, and I can supply the committee with language that would make a conforming change for both the House member and the member appointed by the Senate that you see on page 35. I'm not sure how you want to proceed.
Well, Mr. Chair, we certainly want to conform, so
okay.
Whatever we need to do, I think.
So, Mr. Bowden, do you want to suggest language?
Sure. So, Mr. Chairman, on page 34, line 33, delete appointed, and on page 34, line 34, delete House, and after member, insert appointed by the Speaker of the House. And then on page 35, line 1, after first, insert member, and delete Senator and insert by the Senate.
Okay. Senator Saxog moves language as suggested by counsel. There's no further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion on Senate File 1589. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, briefly, Senator Saxog, Campaign Finance Board, what is the funding to them, and is there any restoration of the political contribution rebate program, or is that coming? Would that be in another bill if it's going to be resurrected at all?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, it is not in this bill. It was not discussed.
Senator Lantz.
Mr. Chairman, there was a question about whether or not the licensing penalties in the cosmetology area were criminal or otherwise, and with the able assistance here of Senator Dibble, we've looked up the statute, and it looks like the penalty provisions are contained in the bill before us on page 44 and page 45, and they're just financial consequences for licensing violations. Do not appear to be criminal penalties in any way.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion on Senate File 1589. If not, Senator Saxog moves that Senate File 1589 as amended be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Saxog and
thank
staff.
You, Mr. Chair, members.
Members, we were scheduled just in terms of scheduling for the committee before we adjourn. We were scheduled to meet at the end of the afternoon today. The transportation bill is not ready. We have Senator Latz's bill tomorrow morning, which should not be a lengthy bill, I don't believe. But we have something we have to work out, so I'm not quite sure we'll have it ready for late this afternoon. So we'll meet tomorrow morning at 8:30. It should not be, I would expect, a lengthy meeting. Okay. If there's nothing else, we're adjourned. My wife is here for